Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Please get in touch with your survivor stories or thank you letters. You can reach us at contact@whydoyouthink.com or on Instagram at Emily_Lang_UK. Hello and welcome to Why Do You Think You've Got No Friends? My name is Emily Lang. I'm an actress, writer, singer, codependent, returnee from rock bottom and a gratefully recovering addict. And this is the podcast where we aim to rid the shame, the highs and lows and deadly blows that ultimately led us to the lessons that we never knew we needed to learn but are so grateful that we did. So, comparing and despairing. In an industry where you are your own commodity, it's very difficult to not look sideways and take it very personally when others are more successful than you. Ultimately, you could not exist on anyone else's road, but it's hard not to want another person's journey when you feel like you are falling behind. But if I have learned anything, and I've said this before and I will say it again, what is for you will not go by you. You have to trust the road that you are on and know that you are being led to the right place. Jack, Barry, and I are discussing all this and more today.
Okay, so it is August 2022. August 2022. I like to do a little introduction about what was happening in the specific time that we're going to be talking about. But August 2022 was a fucking terrible month because my birthday is in August. And August 2022 went down as one of the worst birthdays I've ever had. I know, it was horrendous. But I have a history of bad birthdays. It's a whole thing. But
why was this one so bad?
Oh my God, there was so much.
Summer birthdays, the dream.
So much. I was sat there in my room just crying. A whole other story. But it is August 2022 and we are in Edinburgh at the Fringe. At the Fringe?
Yeah.
Mickey might have joined the chat already, guys. But we are at Edinburgh 2022, August. And in this moment, Jack, why do you think you've got no friends?
I feel, Edinburgh is always such a stressful time for like most comedians, I think. And I don't know how many comics you've had on this podcast, but
there's so many.
I think many of them will tell you that it's where emotional breakdowns happen. It's where they were born, I think. It's the source of emotional breakdowns.
Yeah.
I think it's just, my mum calls it, my mum's a psychologist.
Oh, what's happening?
Yeah, who doesn't believe in therapy, but that's something we can talk about later on. And she says that there's a thing called conference syndrome, which is when you're if you're at a professional conference surrounded by all your peers and colleagues, you just feel like a worthless piece of shit because it feels like everyone else is so much better than you, so much more successful than you, so much more clever than you. And Edinburgh's just like a perfect melting pot of that. You spend like the best part of the year writing your show, taking it up there, and then it's just, it's just like a, a, you're just exhausted the whole time you're up there.
Mm.
But also it's like everything that everyone says to you about don't compare yourself to other people, you know, just focus on your own journey. Don't look at other people's journey. Don't look at social media. But if you've been to Edinburgh during the Fringe, every single surface of the city is plastered with someone else's face.
Yeah.
It's like posters on every single thing that you look. So everywhere you go, you're looking at everybody else's success. And it's like throughout the month, like different stars keep appearing on everybody's... Oh, so-and-so's got 5 stars in that paper.
So-and-so's got...
Oh, look, so-and-so's added an extra show because they've sold out. And it's just... It's impossible not to constantly compare yourself to other people.
Yeah.
And it's just... It just sends you absolutely loopy. I think this year was, like, a particularly... I've had, like, some where they've been really good, but I think post-pandemic...
Yeah.
Having had 2 years of, like, not having to think about it and then being thrust back into it this year, I found it... absolutely terrifying and exhausting. And August was bad, but actually coming back in September, that was when I really went to pieces.
As like a little like come down from it.
Yeah, I think so. And just like suddenly feeling like, oh, right, I've spent all of this year working towards this one thing.
Right.
And was it worth it?
Right.
And just sitting at home, feeling like just an absolute worthless piece of shit. Oh. And also feeling like, I've got no friends. The stupid thing also is like after that, when you've just been like surrounded by other comedians for a month, all you really want to, you're like, well, I don't want to speak to another comedian for like another, for at least a month. I'm going to completely cut myself off from any other comedians.
Mm.
And so like, I just sat at home feeling terrible and depressed for like a month. And then after a month, I finally saw some other comedians and they were all like, oh yeah, we've all been feeling exactly the same way. But everyone was like, I don't want to speak to any other comedian. And it was like, oh right, we actually all could have helped ourselves through these feelings that we were having. But because it was so like traumatizing, I just sat at home feeling like I was alone and I was the only one going through this thing. So yeah. An intense, bleak way to start a podcast, no, but that was what I was going for.
Absolutely not at all. I think it's so relatable. It is so relatable because the thing is, and it doesn't really matter what you do. I've spoken to so many people who work in different kinds of environments and they still feel the same. It is that thing of compare and despair. And there is nothing, and as much as people like, it's fine, and I say it to people all the time, I can't take my own fucking advice. Also, it's stupid advice because it doesn't work.
Yeah.
When you go like, I just don't think about it, don't think about it. You can't know.
Yeah, the only person you've got to compare yourself to is you 1 year ago. And it's like, yeah, well, he's a prick as well. That doesn't help me, does it? We're both losers.
Even when you're knob.
Yeah, but we're both having a terrible time.
But it's really, really, it's really hard. And I think it sort of spans out to so much of when you are in an environment with loads and loads of other people doing the same thing. And you're constantly on like high alert of what's doing well.
Yeah.
And should you be doing that? And oh fuck, is it embarrassing that like my show hasn't sold out when this thing? And so you're just constantly doing this like bashing yourself.
Yeah.
And everybody else is doing the exact same.
Completely. And the problem is when you're comparing yourself to other people, it's not like you're just comparing yourself to one other person. Mm. You're comparing yourself to everyone.
Yeah.
So it feels like, so when that happens, of course, you're not doing the same as all of your peers.
Yeah.
You know, like you have like your own successes.
Yeah.
Because you're only one person and one person can only really have so many successes.
Yeah.
But when you get into that mode of like comparing yourself to other people,
yeah,
it's like when you look at social media, it's like, oh, everyone is, you're looking at like 100 people in one go. Yeah. And it's like, well, of course, then it feels like completely overwhelming that they're doing so many things that you're not doing.
Mm,
because of course it's like impossible for you to do all of that.
Mm.
But it's, it is an exhausting mindset.
It's really funny, this thing as well, like going, everybody is feeling the same, even though you think you're very, very alone in this. Because it's almost like quite a shameful, you think it's sort of like a slightly shameful thing.
Yeah.
It's not that I don't want other people to do well, it's just I want to be doing like as well.
Exactly. There's success for everybody. We can share.
There's not a finite amount of this, like toss some over. But I remember as well being an actor for so long and like my stepmom coming to see, coming or seeing shows when maybe I wasn't working, and then we'd go, oh gosh, that person who's like a contemporary of mine, that person, I don't know, Paula.
Yeah.
Paula. Oh, she was amazing. God, she was amazing. And I want to be like, no, because Paula's just doing the thing that she always does. And actually, she's just done that because, like, that's the one thing that she can do. She's not amazing. And like,
she's not doing anything new.
She's not doing anything new.
Paula's been doing the same thing since drama school.
And I'm literally, and I want to, like, defend it, even though it's just so fucking stupid. But there's this thing of when we are all... You feel like, I read an article once years ago and it's really stuck with me about this. And in it, they talked about being in your tent in Antarctica, feeling so alone, being like, there is no one out there.
No one.
And then if you unzipped it, you see all the other tents and you could just have a massive fucking party in Antarctica and kind of get yourself through it together. But you think that you can't because you're sort of alone in these thoughts when actually everybody feels
I know. And I don't know why it's not more comforting to know that everybody's feeling the same way.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Because... I don't know. To be all like, smash the system. But it's capitalism, I think, is a big part of it. It's like, we are all kind of, it's drilled into us that we're all like these sort of isolated people, you know? Mm. It's like, we've had this like, especially in this country, like, ever since Margaret Thatcher, we've had this like steady erosion of like the idea of a society. It's like we're all individual people and we're all just like out to make our own gains and we're all our own. And that's really, I think, like social media and like this sort of grind culture that we've got now, it really makes you feel like you're your own product.
Yeah,
out and you've got to make gains and you've got to be grinding every day. And, you know, we put so much like of our self-worth in our like productivity and our successes. And I think that's why so many of us feel miserable a lot of the time.
Yeah, we are our own commodity. And when someone literally goes, I don't like it, it's very, and people go, don't take it personally. It's going, but it is literally me.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like I've drawn a picture. Sorry, artist, I know it's difficult. But like if I drawn a picture and people go, oh, I don't like it, it's sort of subjective when they go, I literally don't like you.
Yeah.
It's really hard not to take it personally.
I know.
And also because... being a comedian, being an actor, it's beep. I don't know what you've heard, guys, but it's not fucking easy. It's not easy. And so when you are working and when you are doing the thing, you really want it to be as good as possible.
Of course.
And so when someone goes, oh, that person, oh, Paula's much better than you, you're like, fucking Paula.
And the thing is, they're not even saying that. They're just saying Paula's good. But you can't help but feel like, I'm sure when you're not around, people are saying, Emily's great. But like, all you hear in that moment is like, well, you're not saying that I'm great to my face. You're talking about Paula.
And I bet Paula's been like, Emily just does the same thing over and over again. And it's not impressive that people can cry on cue. Like, it is just about sensitive tear ducts.
Can you cry on cue?
I can.
Can you? But I can't. It's a great talent.
But it's not. It's literally not because of emotion. It's because I have something wrong with my eyes. Whereas if I...
So you're constantly holding back the tears rather than... Really?
It's probably how I got misdiagnosed.
It's constantly streaming tears.
I don't know what's wrong. No, I do have, it's a very weird talent that I can just go like, I've done it a couple of times.
That's so useful. Does it get you out of like train tickets or anything like that? Like parking fines?
Yes.
That's so good.
Not parking because I don't drive.
Oh yeah. But okay. Well, you should start.
But I have been on trains where I've gone, but also.
I didn't remember my rail card.
I've done it recently, which is probably awful. But it's also very funny for me. I've been on a couple of dates because girls are getting back out into the wild, and there's been a few times when I've been like, "Oh God,
I'm not feeling
this."
And
then just been like, "I'm sorry." And they've been like, "Oh fuck!"
That's how you pull the ripcord on a bad date, basically.
And I've gone home to my cat.
Pull the parachute right now! I've got to get out of here. And then what do you say? I'm just sorry. I've remembered something.
I'm just a very emotionally available person. Everything is just like right under the surface, and it is really, really difficult when you put so much of yourself into something, and if your show gets 3 stars compared to someone getting 4 stars, you go, why, what, Why?
Well, yeah. And also, you know that a lot of that is subjective as well.
Yeah.
And it's like the whole sort of arts industry, it's not really, it's not a meritocracy, you know.
Oh, that's a big word. can we explain that for the listeners?
Well, so meritocracy, you know, this idea that like just, you know, the best people do the best. I mean, meritocracy is a lie in our whole society, really. Like, you know, capitalism is built on this idea of meritocracy, that if you're good and if you work the hardest, then you will be the most successful. But we know that's not the case. Like, people get all kinds of like sort of head starts in life, or like people get help from all kinds of different places.
Yeah.
In the arts industry, there's all kinds of different things. But, you know, the people who win awards, they're not necessarily the best people. They're the people with the best PR campaign, or they happen to know the judges or whatever. So we know that that's all going on.
Yeah.
We know that it's not the best people who are doing the best in society.
Yeah.
But we still tell ourselves that when we don't do well. Well, we're like, well, it's obviously because I'm a piece of shit. Everybody hates me.
Yeah.
And it's not the case. I mean, I always worry that I sound bitter. I don't want to sound bitter.
No. I don't think it's about being bitter at all. I think it is genuinely going, we put so much of ourselves into something. Because I think it's sort of, Tom, Lucy and I had this conversation about, you know, he was kind of like, this is fucking easy, guys. I'm just like trolling along. This happens to everybody. It's so, so simple. And then when he had his mic broke on stage.
Yeah.
And he was like, and he said it was the worst moment. He just had this awful, awful thing of going, oh, this isn't easy. I can't just swan my way through this. And I think it's not about being bitter at all. It's just going, we have to work really hard.
Oh,
and
totally.
And people don't see that. I think people look at it as going this, like, like, you know, when there were all the cuts and whoever it fucking was, I want to say Dominic Cummings, was like, said something like, tell those fucking dancers they're in like their last year in the queue. And it's because it looks like we're sort of farting about, but actually so much of ourselves goes into it. And it's,
it does go
and
into
it's
it.
It's really
yeah.
upsetting.
It is. And it's like what you were saying earlier. It's like, it's hard to separate yourself from your own art. It's like, if you are a painter, you can do a painting.
Mm.
And I saw someone describe it perfectly once. It's like, you know, if you do a painting, you can then leave your painting, you can go to like a coffee shop and order a coffee, and then you have an interaction as yourself, as a person, and it's not you, the art. You know, it's not you, the art.
Walking around with it.
But whereas if I get a bad review and then I go to the coffee shop, it's like, that's still me. And then I'm like, it's just me the whole time. And if people don't like the art that I'm creating, then it does feel like they don't like me as a person.
Yeah, 100%.
But it also, it's funny what you say there as well, like about how you feel like you're farting around, because I think then that makes you then feel more embarrassed.
Exactly.
If you're
exactly.
Like, it is a silly job. Of course it's a silly job to be in the arts, but I think it is an important job.
It's incredibly important.
Hang me. It's like
sue me.
Sue me. I know it's stupid, but we need artists, and I think a society without artists would be really bleak. But at the same time, you know, we all know that we're going into this because we think it's fun, and it is quite a nice. So if you're not having the successes that you feel like, especially with Edinburgh, it's like you pay a lot of money to go up there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if you don't get the successes that you were hoping for from that investment, you feel like a silly little child who's like paid all this money.
Yeah.
It's a bit like when you're a kid and you rehearse like a little dance routine, and then you make your mum and dad come into the living room and you're like, watch us do like a little dance. But it's like that, but you've paid £10,000 to do that. And you're like trying to say that to the whole country. You're like, look at my dance that I've been rehearsing, mummy and daddy. And then they go, yeah, it's fine. And you're like, oh, right, I really am silly.
I fucking hate improv.
I could have just got a job as a nurse and been like a useful member of society.
Yeah.
But instead I've tried to do this just because I've got an ego and I want to have like a nice, fun time at work.
So that
makes you feel extra embarrassed and stupid.
Yeah.
These are all feelings that I was wrestling with when I came away from Edinburgh last year. It's just like, and it didn't even go badly.
It went terribly. Yeah.
I got good reviews. I didn't get loads of reviews, but they were all really good. Mm. I sold lots of tickets. Loads of people came to see the show.
Mm.
But you sort of, it's just like without like then being like the most successful show at the Fringe.
Right, yeah.
There's like 10 shows at the Fringe each year that are like the shows.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, everyone goes to see them. They get all the best reviews. They get the awards, all this kind of thing. And you sort of know within the first 3 days of the Fringe what those shows are going to be. And so I always sort of say going to do the Fringe, it's like spending 10 grand on a lottery ticket.
Yeah.
And you know within the first week whether your numbers have come in. And if they haven't, then you just got to like do the rest of the month exhaustingly, do this show every day, knowing that
is there any
you
chance that
won.
It will change? Like, do the numbers get drawn again at any point?
No, not really. It's no, really, like, really, it's like before you get there. You can tell, like, before you get there, who's got buzz, what shows have got the buzz. But you have to commit to doing the Fringe in like February.
Yeah.
So you say in February, I'm going to do it. You start paying your money. You pay for marketing. You pay for your flyers, your photos, all this stuff. You start investing the money. You have to get your accommodation.
Yeah.
And then by like July, you can tell which shows are going to have a really good Fringe.
Oh my God, this is way more political than I thought it was.
Oh, it's mad. I mean, it's just like that. You can just kind of tell like who's got the buzz. But like by then it's too late to pull out. You're like, well, right, this isn't going to be my year, but I've already invested all this money. So I've got to go on. I'll just have to do some really good flyering while I'm up there, or like try and do some good tweets, and maybe one of them will go viral and then people will want to come see the show.
Yeah.
But otherwise it's just like a month of like hard graft, like trying to get people in. And it's a slog.
It's really tough. And I really admire anyone who does take something to Edinburgh.
Yeah.
I've just like never even considered it.
Yeah,
because
well,
I know how hard it is.
Yeah, I mean, why would it be mad? It'd be mad too. But I've done it every year for 11 years. And at first it was fun. I started doing it when I was a student, and then it was like there was no investment, there was no risk. It was like, yeah, we're doing student show. Yeah, we're all going to get pissed after the show and we're going to have a great time.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it's like, oh, right, I'm investing loads of my own money and I'm the brand now.
Yeah.
And it's my business. And if people don't come see it, I'm going to lose loads of money and I'm going to feel like a piece of shit. And
be like, look at my dance.
Yeah,
and
no one likes it. Yeah, exactly. Mum and dad are like turning around and what, like, mum and dad are sort of like keeping an eye on the TV while you're doing the dance.
Yeah.
You're like, can't you turn off the TV, mummy? Like, no.
They're just live tweeting how shit it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I never even really get tweets of like people hating it or anything like that. But yeah, it's sort of that feeling that maybe hate would be better than ambivalence.
Well, this is constantly my theory that I am one of those annoying people who just like tends to live in superlatives and really enjoy superlatives.
Yeah.
So I either want it to be the best or I want it to be the fucking worst.
Yeah, better.
If I hover in mild, I hate, like, I can't like it.
Mild's the
it.
Worst. That's. There's nothing worse than like purgatory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I want to like go see something, I want to see something that has one star.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yeah. And actually, I think I do prefer the one star.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Yeah. Go to see a 5-star comedy show. I'm hating that. I'm just like, oh, God, I wish I thought of that joke.
Yeah.
You know, if I watch like a good comedian, I can just like appreciate the craft, but I don't really enjoy it. If I watch a bad comedy show, I'm having the time of my life. I absolutely love it.
Yeah. Throwing shit.
Yeah. I'm like, this is great. They've got no idea what they're doing. Yeah. I always think like hating someone is one of the nicest things that you can do for them.
That is amazing.
Yeah. If you've got someone who you like really hate, you're like,
what, the nicest things that you can do for them? Because then they're
existing in that they're properly existing. Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
There's that bit in Mad Men. I haven't really watched Mad Men, but I just know there's like that bit where Don Draper's getting into a lift and this guy goes, I feel sorry for you. And he says, I don't think about you at all. And that's so devastating.
Yeah.
It's so much worse than him being like, I think you're a little worm.
Yeah.
I'd rather someone think I'm a little worm than not think about me at all.
That's, it's so true. Because we spend like, because if you're just not seen in any way, if you're just kind of like passing by, like, summer's breeze is all right, but you never think about it again.
Yeah.
I would rather.
That's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah.
I know, which again is probably, it's all tied up with our sort of that's our society now, isn't it? It's like we're all on social media. Everyone's like posting stuff, hoping that you know, lots of people will like their photo. And the thought of not being noticed is is terrifying.
But I think it's so interesting what you say of being like, unless it is sort of the best show, unless there's some kind of groundbreaking about it, it's never going to be like completely satisfying in some way. And it's the same way that, you know, people with eating disorders go, they will pick a goal weight. I can guarantee when they reach that goal weight, it will not matter.
No, and yes, it will move and there'll just be a new goal. Yeah,
because
yeah.
there's nothing. I mean, Harry Trevelyan came on a couple of weeks ago and he was...
I love him.
Oh, he's amazing.
I just met him the other day. Oh my God. He's a lovely man.
Absolutely obsessed. Yeah. But we were talking about how much pressure we feel when people go, oh, should we watch a film? And then you suggest a film and they put the film on and you're like, there's no energy going to the film. All of your energy is going, are they enjoying it?
Yeah, oh my God, that's awful. It. Yeah. And they look at their phone and your bit dies.
And actually, I think Harry said that he was in Edinburgh. He was in Edinburgh and which says so much about Edinburgh and how he was feeling. But someone at some point in this movie that he'd suggested did something like an exhale and probably wasn't even about the film.
Yeah.
And he went to another room and cried. Because he was like, unless this movie changes their life.
Yeah. I've put so much on the line by suggesting this film. Yeah, it's so stupid. You make the film, but you're like, this says so much about me and my taste.
Yeah. Unless I am like thanked for what I have brought into this person's life, I'm going to think that I'm a fucking failure. He's like,
oh my God.
I went to the room and cried. Because someone went,
they're probably remembering something that happened 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah, but this is the thing that I was going to say, like, you know, you're sort of... this thing about feeling maybe slightly embarrassed around, you know, your show not being exactly what you want it to be and going, oh, I'm just like, feel fucking embarrassed about this. And, oh my God, everyone's thinking and going, oh God, poor Jack and his pipe dreams.
Yeah.
You think everyone's doing that. And actually, everyone's just thinking about themselves thinking, and you forget. So I'm always going like, oh God, people are thinking about poor Emily. No one gives a shit.
Yeah.
No one's fucking thinking about it anymore. There was, so I'm doing a song. I'm just thinking about what you said about doing the little dance. My brother is getting married. As I'm sure many, many listeners will know, he's getting married. I'm bridesmaid, and they...
They asked you to do a song?
Yeah.
That's very fun. Well, no?
Yeah, but like I thought I was getting like a high profile spot of going, oh, Emily's going to sing like the first dance.
Yeah.
Because it's sweet.
Yeah.
Because it's family, blah, blah, blah. But it turns out they were like, no, we're just like in the service. Just do a little song. And I was like...
While people are talking.
Yeah. And I was like, guys, I really... It feels like they've gone... it's changed, the whole circumstance changed, but at the time I was like, it kind of feels like it will be sort of, okay, Emily's going to get up and do a song.
Yeah.
She's had a really tough time.
Yeah.
So everyone just really, really supportive.
Yeah, she begged us for this.
Yeah, she's got to do something in the wedding. Oh, what's she going to do? She's going to do a little song. And I was like, I can't, that's awful.
Because
but the thing is, I was like, guys, if you want me to do something in the wedding, get me to read something. The best thing about me is not my voice. Like, I'm like an all right singer, but that is definitely not the best thing.
Can you do some choreography with the singing maybe as well?
100%. Anyway, I've come up with a whole thing. So now in my inability to take anything fucking seriously, at first I was like, I'm going to sing Teenage Dirtbag and like get the
yes.
whole. But then the guy organizing the music was like, that's weird. Because when I suggested it, he went, oh, is that a special song to them? I was like, no.
Special song to me.
I love it.
What's this got to do with them? This isn't their day. This is my day.
This is all about me. but no, I've picked another song that's going to be like funny and nice and I'm going to love actually the shit out of it.
That's really fun. Yeah. That's really fun. It's quite stressful doing something at someone's wedding as a performer.
Yeah.
As a performer, I was best man at a wedding last year. My mate from school, and very beautiful wedding, and I was very honoured to be asked to be best man.
Yeah.
But so, something so stressful about doing it as a comedian.
Yes,
I had people coming up to me the whole day, like with these big shit-eating grins on their faces, like. comedian. Oh God, we should be selling tickets to this. It's going to be the best man speech ever. I was like, no, lower your expectations right now. This is a different vibe. But usually if a show's going slow, I do like crowd work and I like roast the audience a little bit. I can't do that to your nan and like the aunts and uncles who are all gathered here. Me being like, hey, well, who's this piece of shit in the front row?
Yeah. You guys together?
Yeah, how long have you been together? What do you do? Sales? Oh, yeah, get out of here, man. Like, I can't, it's a very different vibe. I'm supposed to be like heartfelt and like, oh, I love you guys so much. What a beautiful couple.
Guys, this is an entirely different craft. This is not.
Yeah, exactly. It's a whole new skill that I've got to learn. But yeah, it was quite fun. It was funny. Afterwards they said, someone came up to me and they were like, oh, most best man speeches, it's like the best man roasting the groom the whole time. But yours was just you roasting yourself. It was like a speech. I love this guy and I'm the worst.
Yeah.
And it was just like, well, that's all I know how to do. It's like self-deprecation.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So, but it was an experience. Yeah. There's something so stressful about doing that.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
But
yeah. So in this fallout from the Fringe, and I'm guessing it's just we picked 2022, but do you feel like the stress, the, I don't want to say shame, but, you know, those emotions, do you feel like it's gotten worse every year, or has there been a particular year that was worse than others?
No, I wouldn't say so. I think it feels like it's been a bit like of a roller coaster, a bit sort of peaks and troughs.
Right.
Like, first couple of years I did The Fringe, I felt very, like, anxious about doing my own show and doing this, and then I kind of learned how to deal with it, and when I did The Fringe in 2019, actually, I felt pretty good, and I was pretty, like, measured. And I think I managed to keep my mental health under control. Mm. I started doing therapy in the pandemic. It was like, I'd been thinking about it for years.
Did that piss your mum off?
Yeah, big time. Every time I see her, she's like, oh God, I suppose you've been slagging me off for therapy again, have you? She gets so defensive about it. She's like, well, I'm sure that you were talking about how awful I am in therapy. Of course I am. That's what therapy's for. I'm slagging you off all the time.
Slagging you.
But I say, like, yeah, that's why I don't know if I could have kids. It's too, like, it's an impossible job.
Yeah.
My parents are great. They gave me the best start I could have had. Like, they gave me a great upbringing. But they still fuck me up beyond all recognition.
Yeah.
It's all their fault. But
is that like a Philip Larkin poem?
Is it?
You know, have you ever heard them?
No.
They fuck you up, your mum and dad, they fuck you up, they do.
Yeah.
They pass on all the faults they had and add some extra just for you.
That's it, isn't it? Yeah, that is it. And I'm still trying to figure it out what and why they fuck me up in this way. but I did it. And so I sort of went into The Fringe 2022 thinking, I've had a couple of years off with the pandemic.
Yeah.
I've had a nice time chilling at home. And now I'm going to go into it with all these new things I've learned in therapy. And then it was worse than I ever imagined. And it was like, I even sort of started getting annoyed with therapy at one point. I was like, well, what's the fucking point of this then? I've spent all this money.
Yeah.
I'm doing all this work.
Yeah.
And actually I feel worse than I've ever felt before.
Yeah.
And, I couldn't quite figure out why.
Yeah.
I think part of it was just like, you do like years and years and years of this. I did 10 years of The Fringe before the pandemic. and then hit the pandemic. And I think I just wasn't prepared for like getting back to stuff.
Yes. Well,
I think everyone was like, we're back to normal now. Everything's fine. And I didn't feel normal. I didn't feel the same.
Yeah.
But I was trying to pretend that I was. And I think that like contributed a lot to like that feeling of just like being completely overwhelmed by everything.
Yeah. There's been a few episodes where we've spoken about the pandemic and, you know, and what it was like for different people in different circumstances. But I definitely, there has been a sort of resounding thing of people who are in the arts of some form where it was a slight relief.
Yeah, completely.
Because there is so much pressure on you all the time. You are hypervigilant, looking for the next job, not knowing where it's going to come from. Like, you know, it's every day you're waking up going, am I going to get a call today?
And also with social media, it's like you should be on all the time.
You should be posting
every 2 minutes or something.
Fucking everyone's exhausting.
Yeah.
And suddenly there was this forced stop.
Yeah.
And it was like going, oh my God, thank God.
Yeah. Completely. And then thank God for that. Yeah. It was like a gap year.
It was this forced stop.
People died, obviously. Very sad. Very sad that people died, but I had a nice time. Can I say that?
I had a lovely time. I think it was, and it was the first time I wasn't working when the pandemic started, and I had friends who were.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I'd, like, ever you'd been like, oh my God, those poor souls who are working because their job has to stop.
Yeah.
It was literally the first time ever. But this forced pause of not having to look sideways and anyway see what anybody else was doing.
Completely.
Have that space. It was actually a real relief. But then coming out the other side of it, what I found was that suddenly, because there'd been this full stop, suddenly every motherfucker was free.
Yeah.
And so the jobs that I was going up for, the jobs that I was getting were now like in a different category.
Completely.
And it was suddenly like way harder.
And it felt way more competitive all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And I sort of said to myself during the pandemic, I was like, God, I'm really going to learn something about this, like work-life balance. And I don't have to say yes to every piece of work that gets offered me. Like, I need to pick and choose stuff for my mental health.
Mm.
And then as soon as stuff opened up and it felt that, and I was like, I need to say yes to literally everything.
Yeah.
And I was like doing all these random gigs all over the place. I was doing all these bits of work I didn't want to do.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I was exhausted and so unhappy.
Yeah.
And also just felt so disconnected from people generally, like, I think although we were all trapped in our houses, you knew where everybody was.
Who were you with when you were there?
It was me and my partner, and we had a housemate, and then we actually had three housemates throughout the course of the pandemic. He was there for a while. We've been my really good mate Pete. Mm. He moved out sort of end of 2020, I think, and we had another housemate who came in for a bit. And then she moved out summer 2021, I think. And then my new housemate moved in. Mm. We still live together. But like, yeah. So it was the three of us mostly and the cat. And but you knew where everybody was.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was like, there were people that I was talking to who I haven't really spoken to for years, you know, like, although I know people hated Zoom. And it's not as good as hanging out with someone.
Mm.
But I was talking to people a lot more than I do normally.
Yeah.
So I got friends from school who live abroad.
Mm.
And we were like doing Zoom calls together like every week.
Mm.
And I was like, fucking hell, I haven't hung out with you in like 10 years. And now we're like hanging out every couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And so I was actually talking to people more.
Yeah.
And then suddenly everything opened up. Everyone was super busy again doing their own thing. And I was like, I can't nail anybody down. It's back to that normal thing of, especially living in London, where you're like, we should go for a beer. Oh, great. Well, I'm free in 6 months' time. It's like, okay, we'll pencil a date in 6 months' time. Like,
and then
that won't happen anyway. Exactly. So then I was just like, oh my God, I can't see my friends. I can't see my family. I can't see my loved ones.
Yeah.
And so I felt very isolated
in
that way as well after the pandemic.
Mm.
And so trying to like create something and trying to like get back to working whilst feeling very disconnected from everyone was like,
it's really difficult.
Yeah.
It's really, really difficult.
It hit everything as well. It's the sort of emotions that I was feeling, especially post the Fringe, like it was funny, the things that I was starting to feel insecure about.
Yeah.
that I'd never felt insecure about before.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, sort of.
Me and my partner we're in an open relationship.
Uh-huh.
We've been together for like 8 years.
I love this. Can we talk about this more when the microphones are off?
We can absolutely talk about this all you want. I love talking about this.
Because I think that's so cool.
Yeah. So we've been together for like 8 years. We were together for like 3.5 years, monogamous.
Mm.
And then we sort of just discussed it and we were like, oh, like, I think maybe we could try being, we sort of tried sort of opening up the relationship slightly, like bringing in other people and then sort of doing stuff separately from each other.
Mm.
And it's really worked and it's been really good.
Round of applause. I was discussing this with someone who I work with at the Pottery Studio. We were like, monogamy works for some people. Monogamy, that is you. Namaste.
Completely.
It is everyone's own choice. And if you have the luxury to be able to design your own relationship, fucking go for it. But I personally am not a monogamist.
I think a lot of people aren't.
Sorry, boys.
I think, it gets sold to us as like the default.
Yeah.
And if you're non-monogamous, then you're like a bit weird, and that seems to be like the narrative, but like people are all so different.
They're so different.
People are so different, and so the relationships between two people are going to be, there are infinite different ways it could work.
Yeah.
So I think you just got to discuss what works for you.
It is not a one size fits all phenomenon, guys.
And I think a lot of the time, like, that kind of dialogue gets shut down in relationships because that's kind of what we get told. Like,
is taboo.
Yeah, no. Exactly. So, babe, do you think she's attractive? No, babe. I only look at you. Like, if I go to the zoo, I don't even look at the female animals. Like, I've only ever looked at one woman, and it's you. And it's like, you know, if you start a relationship by saying you don't find anyone else attractive, you're starting your relationship on a lie. And you like, and then people are like, he cheated on me. I can't believe it. It's like, well, you told him to lie to you from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and so I think I think just having that, being able to have that conversation with people.
Yeah.
I say this in my show, like, I have a lot of people come up to me and they're like, oh yeah, I think I would quite like to be in an open relationship, but I know my partner wouldn't want to.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, well, your partner said the same thing to me like 2 weeks ago. So you guys need to communicate better. Like, you guys need to be able to have this conversation.
I can't remember how we got onto this subject.
So it was like, my therapist always says it's kind of mad because I have all these insecurities and I have these things that I feel stressed about. And mostly it's professional. And a lot of the time it's like my professional insecurities. And in myself as a person, I generally feel okay. But I just constantly am worried about how well I'm doing professionally.
Mm-hmm.
And she's always like, it's kind of amazing that you don't feel insecure in that relationship at all. Like, you're fine with your partner going off and having sex with someone or having relationships with other people.
Right.
And I'm like, no, because I feel so secure in my relationship with her.
Mm.
And I feel like we're so strong that it just doesn't really worry me.
Mm-mm.
But such was my insecurity in Edinburgh, and afterwards, I actually started to wobble a little bit with that It was like 1 week... Maybe this is too much detail.
No,
but there was one week where, like, just after the Fringe, and she went on a date with someone. And I just kind of felt terrible. I was like, well, obviously she's going to fall in love with this person. And she's going to leave me. And she's going to realise that anyone is better than me. And I'm such a worthless. And I'd never felt like that before.
Mm.
And it was only because I was feeling this vulnerability because of, like...
Mm.
All the professional stuff that I was doing, it somehow started to like infect other parts of my life as well.
But we channel it. I like the image I'm seeing in my head is like sometimes, well, I don't know, it was like in science at school when there'd be a big beaker and all these little lines coming off it and then the lip went down. And it's literally like you have all of this stress and anxiety, discomfort, and it's been put into one place, but it can't all stay in that one place because it's too much. So it dribbles into other little bits, and that suddenly are getting like sparked in a way that they never were before, and you're suddenly paying attention to them and going, maybe this is the problem, fuck. And it's suddenly draining when things, and it's really upsetting when things that weren't bothering you suddenly start
completely
to bother you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you're like, that was the one thing I had down.
Yeah.
I had that sorted out. At least I didn't feel shit about
yeah,
the way I look. Like, I never really feel bothered about that. But suddenly I was like,
oh. Why am I suddenly caring about this?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God, it's something else for me to stress about.
Exactly.
And then, there is no respite because the places that were safe, that were comforting, are suddenly not, because you're finding the problems in them. And it is literally because it's coming from a source of real anxiety and stress. It is emanating from a totally different place. But we love to place anxiety on things because it makes it easier to control as well.
I suppose so. Yeah, yeah. And I talk about this a lot with my therapist. It's like, I don't get why it feels so comfortable to spiral and start feeling
it's
negative.
It's familiar.
It is. And I think we kind of just get addicted to that feeling of like you say, it's like, oh, we can control this. And it's like,
I'm so much more comfortable when if I feel happy and things are going well, I'm like, well, what the fuck is this? What's the glitch in the system here? What's going on?
Well, exactly. Well, what's it going to be?
Yeah.
So, okay, I'll try and find something now.
There's something in the matrix that's like, that's going win right now.
Yeah.
And it's really frightening. It's almost like I'd be more comfortable with the 1-star review than the 5-star.
Yeah.
Because then it's just, at least you can control it. It's the same way with like my codependency, for example. If someone says that I've done something a bit weird, and someone goes, oh, that thing that you did, that was really upsetting. And I didn't think it was weird. I was actually like, no, I think that was pretty legit what I did. I would so much rather accept all the responsibility for it and take all of their pain and all of their upset and be like, I'll take it. Because if I take it, I can control it.
Yeah. And then you know where you're at with it and it can't really surprise you later. Yeah,
rather than them spiraling over in their own place about something you've done and be like, no, take it. Yes, absolutely. Fuck. Oh my God, I fucked up. Yep. Let me have it. And then I can turn it into something for myself and just tuck it away.
Yeah.
But that's really exhausting.
It's really exhausting and not very healthy at all.
Because it's easy to feel like a piece of shit.
It really is.
Yeah.
And pleasant in a weird way. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if it's like pushing on a bruise or something. You're just like,
That is exactly the thing that I said. It's like pushing on an ulcer.
Yeah. My therapist always says, like, you know, when you can feel yourself going into those negative spirals, you just have to focus on something to pull yourself out. And I'm like, yeah, I know what to do. But sometimes I literally will be like, I'll just give myself 10 more minutes of
thinking I'm
the worst guy in the world.
It is almost, you have to kind of allot time to do it. And it does sound very weird, but I did it when I was in rehab.
I didn't know that.
When I was in rehab, I was going through this terrible, terrible heartbreak, and I would literally have to go, I'm going to give myself 20 minutes today to think about this.
Yeah,
exactly. So that I can't
indulge that
all pain. Those feelings. Let them all come. Let all those feelings, all those thoughts come. And then at least it is just like a little bit of a release rather than going, no.
Yeah.
You kind of, if you literally allow yourself to do it, it does help it. So at this point in the podcast, I like to ask one of my favorite questions, which is, you know, we've talked about the stress and anxiety and how this affects you and how you can feel all those things that you've been feeling. But what are the things about you that you really appreciate and love?
About me personally or about my life?
About you personally.
Things that I like about me personally. Oh God, now you're really getting into.
Yeah, I know, it's the worst. It's so much easier to go, oh, I'm a fucking, oh, I'm a blah,
I can
I'm,
talk
I'm
for
mess.
Hours about what's awful about me.
But when you suddenly go, what's great about you? Like, yeah. I don't. Like,
I like to think that I'm funny. If I put a lot of too much stock in it because it is my job now. But
you are very funny from it.
Okay, well, thank you. Oh, thank God. I can go. I can have a good night's sleep tonight.
Oh, my God, that's one night's sleep. Oh,
but I like to think that I'm... I think a lot about other people, and I do like try and do a lot to support my friends and family and to... and I think... I mean, everybody's quite selfish, aren't they? But I try and be... to think about other people as much as I can. I think I don't do a terrible job about doing that.
That's great.
What else?
I don't want to say bravery, because I think bravery is the wrong word, but I guess just this, the attitude you have towards your relationship and just like fucking anyone else's opinion about it and being open about that, I think is really cool, because it then it paves the way for other people who feel the same but haven't had the space to talk about it or feel like that.
Yeah, well, I hope so. I talk about this a lot in my show that I'm touring at the moment. Mm. So it's just like, I think it's and that is something that I feel grateful for all the time, is my relationship. I think the relationship I built with my partner, she's the best thing in the world. And I think the fact that we're able to like be open and honest with each other with enough that we've now got into this situation that we feel comfortable doing this is something that I feel grateful for all the time.
And that actually kind of leads me on to my next thing, which is we have a little segment that we like to call thank you letters, where we ask our guests to say thank you to or express gratitude for a person or a place or a thing or whatever you want.
Well, I'll always express gratitude, for my partner, Martina. She's the best.
Go on, Martina.
And, I feel hugely grateful for her all the time. And I don't deserve her, I think, a lot of the time. I think that's the thing that I always end up thinking when I'm feeling really down on myself and spiraling in negativity. I'm like, oh, you should just leave me and go find someone better. Like, you shouldn't have to put up with me being a miserable git the whole time.
But then
I support her through her low moments as well. And I think hopefully we make it work.
Give and take.
I'm going to Argentina next week to see the in-laws. She's Argentinian. She's there now.
Sweet.
And I'm going to go out next week.
Where in Argentina?
In Buenos Aires, outside Buenos Aires.
Buenos Aires.
In the burbs. It's not really like the. It's not the city. It's like she sort of lives out in the sticks. But yeah, that was actually how I met your producer Felipe.
Well, we were saying this
my first ever Spanish language,
which is
gig.
Amazing.
Yeah,
because Felipe, my producer Felipe, who's featured on the podcast before, speaks fluent Spanish, and you went to the Spanish gig.
Mm-hmm.
Katie Green, who's also been on the podcast.
She's great.
She's amazing.
We both did a gig in Spanish, which was something I never thought I would do.
That's incredible. That is another thing. Bravery. I'm going to add bravery to your list of doing that, because because the greatest compliment I can give anybody is being fearless. I think it's fucking amazing.
I have a lot of fear. I have plenty of fear, but you just gotta push through it.
In that capacity, you just like go like, oh god, I am riddled with fear, but just this thing going, oh fuck it, fear again.
Yeah, doing stand up. The first 2 years I did stand up, every single gig I did, I would pray that the venue would burn down. The whole trip to the gig, I'd be like, gets hurt, but please just let me arrive at like a gutted mess of a building. I just have to go home and not do this.
I think comedy is such. I think you have to be really fucking brave to do it. It is, you have to be really brave, because it's tough.
It's tough.
Up on stage with a microphone and making people laugh. I've dabbled with the idea of doing it and then being like, no, because I know myself and I know if no one laughs, I will probably die. I wouldn't be able to hack it.
But in a way, that's the best thing that can happen.
What,
once
dying?
You have one bad gig and dying on stage, you're like, oh, okay.
Oh, and actually, I didn't die in real life.
I still cringe about it a little bit, but it's like, right. Ultimately, it's fine.
And everyone has one, everyone tanks.
Literally everybody does it. Yeah. And once it happens, you're like, all right, okay, well, it could have been worse.
Yeah. And then once you've gotten past it and you go, well, that's literally that is probably the worst that can happen.
Exactly. It kind of stops the fear, really.
Yeah.
It's like once you've had that terrible gig, you're like, okay, well, I know not to fear it now.
There we go. And speaking of gigs, you are on tour.
I'm on tour, yeah.
And
the show very much talking about what we've been talking about.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's called Don't Happy, Be Worry. Because that's how I feel a lot of the time, and so I'm going to I've done a lot of the tour already, but I've still got a few places like Brighton, Bristol, Leeds, Oxford, nice. Milton Keynes. Please come on down.
Yeah.
You can find get tickets on my website jackbarry.co.uk.
I will link all of your socials and tour dates and all the gig
Lovely.
Stuff. It will be in the bio, dear listeners, so just scroll on down and you can find everything there. But I want to say thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
It was really, really lovely. I want to discuss a ton more when we don't have the microphones going on. but thank you. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you for your openness. Thank you for dealing with Mickey, who's now in absentia, but
he's gorgeous.
He is, isn't he?
All day. Yeah.
He is gorgeous, but and I act like I birthed him.
Yeah.
And I had nothing to do with how gorgeous he is. I took him to the vet the other day and the vet was like, oh, he's perfect, isn't he? He's absolutely perfect. Isn't he beautiful? And I was like, yeah, he is. Yes, he is. I had something to do with it.
Yeah.
Absolutely fucking nothing.
Anyway. All you've done is kept him alive to this point.
I mean, yeah, and that's
something to be proud of in itself.
Not for me, yeah. Barely keep a plant alive. But thank you so much. Really appreciate you coming.
Thank you.
Absolutely lovely. Bye. Join me next week with my beautiful new friend, comedian Vittorio Angeloni. If you or anyone you know is struggling or needs help with the issues discussed on Why Do You Think You've Got No Friends, please visit the podcast bio where you will find contact numbers with people readily available to give support. Please get in touch with your survivor stories at either contact@whydoyouthink.com or on Instagram at Emily_Lang_UK. To have your story or your thank you letter read on the podcast, please put survivor story or thank you letter either at the top or in the subject line. We really want to hear from you. We don't care if it's a catastrophe story or a small win from your week. Your favorite place, person, or thing, we are here for all of it. Don't forget to rate and subscribe, and I'll talk to you soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.